I've been told that this is not for children. So if you are a child, stop listening.
We've only been to La Bodega for brunches. We've never gone and like had a dinner there.
See, we've gone. I have not. We have yet to do their brunch there, but we've done we have done their dinner there quite a bit, and even lunch, and it's great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I mean, but yeah, I have an issue with it when it's, you know, it's like, so you bring in chips and salsa if you want to pay for it.
And you have to
where
pay for each thing separately. Like, depending on the size of the salsa, you have to pay for, like, the large salsa or...
Yeah! Or, like, are they bringing one basket?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want more chips...
Yeah, that
it's like,
pisses me off. They're like, we're going to tease you with the chips.
Yes.
And then leave you wanting more. Yeah.
And then your child is taking the chips. You're like, no chips for you, boy!
We have not had to deal with that, but if we took our cats, I'm sure they would... Well, anyway,
yeah.
But...
Oh, I'm sure on that one. Yeah, so
it's
I did. So listening to your guys' recording, I was just like, "Oh yeah, I have to do one with those two. I have to." It's just like it was, and of course, Ryan and Celeste. I thought we were going to be recording, and when we recorded the episode that we just put out last night, and Ryan and Celeste was like, "Oh no, we're out of town," and I'm like, "Oh," and I forget where they're going.
Vegas.
I was going to say it's either Vegas, Wisconsin, or Minnesota. They're probably not in Minnesota because the Twins aren't playing somebody.
Yeah.
And so I was like, they got to be going to Vegas. And so Ryan's probably drunk in a bathroom somewhere.
Oh.
And, you never heard that story?
No.
Oh, sorry, Ryan. We're going to do that story real quick.
Okay.
It's funny. Like, him and Celeste were playing Pai Gow. And Pai Gow is a very good game that you want to play in Vegas if you just want to drink for free. Because it's a very much of a push game where it's like, yeah, the chances of you winning aren't that great, but the chances of you losing are probably around the same too. So it's constantly push, push, push. So you're not losing any money, but you can sit there for hours and just drink for free. And like, I think they were playing Pai Gow, and then Ryan's like, I gotta go to the bathroom. It was one of those instances, you stand up, you're like...
And he was like, everything's spinning.
Yep, not good. And he went to the bathroom, and he stayed there. And, like, Celeste's like, where'd Ryan go? And she had to, like, go after him and find him and stuff like that.
She, like, peeking her head into the men's room.
Yes,
Ryan.
She was. She had to go in there, and, like, she's even texted me. She's like, Ryan's in the bathroom. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm in Kansas City. What do you want me to do? I'm like, I'm not there.
Just grab him randomly. Excuse
right.
me, sir. Can you please go fetch my husband?
Yeah.
Make
He's
sure.
the one wrapped around the toilet. Which one? All five.
Yeah. Pull
all
his hair back while he pukes.
Yeah.
He has
what hair?
All of his hair.
Well, we just rub his scalp a little bit. It's like a
spritz him with some cool water.
Yeah.
There you go. You're going to be fine.
And then he does the cat thing with the paws.
Yeah.
You know, in his face. But yeah, so this is a Verbal Distillery, and as you've noticed, Ryan and Celeste are not here, so we have brought back Charles and Nate, fan favorites.
So excited to be here.
Yes.
Be back.
So we're going to talk a little bit about some whiskey and get a little weird, and we even have a special bottle tonight. We're going to save that one for last. We're going to start with the cheap shit in the beginning. But
all right.
First things first, I got to look at Celeste's timeline. I always forget Celeste's great at. She keeps us on track on where we need to go and talk about what we usually talk about. I always
so
am just like, I'm ready to just jibber jab for forever. But basically, has anything weird happened to anybody? I know you mentioned you almost lost a cat.
I told Ryan and Celeste this yesterday. I was at the World War I Museum on Thursday setting up for the senior graphic design show from Johnson County.
Nice.
And this man walked by who looked just like Ryan. In a
really?
Suit. And so, of course, I was doing the awkward arm thing of, should I wave? And I'm just staring at this guy who looks like Ryan, and he notices me staring, so he turns and looks back at me, and so we're just kind of staring at each other.
Uncomfortably.
And he kind of had this look like, what the fuck are you staring at me for? And
did
so
you just
like,
high-five him? Like, didn't even say anything, just like, boom!
No, there were no words. Like, I mean, it was a fair amount of distance, but I was still not convinced that it wasn't Ryan. So even after I asked Celeste, I saw him yesterday, I was like, so were you by chance strolling around the World War I Museum in a suit? And he said no, so I have to accept that it wasn't him. But there is a man that looks just like Ryan that either works at the World War I Museum or was there that day. I don't know. It was just weird because I've never been so sure of something, like recognizing somebody, and it's not.
I've had Ryan sightings before. It's funny you should even bring this up. Like, and like, I used to travel quite a bit for work, and I've had some few times where I'm like, no, I know he's back home. Is he? You know, it's like, it's a very distinct, like, tall.
Yeah, this guy was
slender.
Super tall. Bald.
Slender, balding,
head.
Yeah, balding,
shaved head,
sides, you know, and a beard, and
yeah.
then the thick rim glasses,
yes.
And you're just kind of like, and like a lot of times, like I do have vision issues, me personally. It's like mm-hmm. It's just from years being in front of a computer, but they aren't like, I mean, I do have contacts and glasses I can wear, but I mean, I can still read fine, you know. It's
mm-hmm.
not, they're not horribly thing, but when it comes to distance like that, I can be like super squinting, and I'm like. Is that Ryan?
Yeah.
It's happened to me numerous of times, so that does not shock me at
yeah.
all.
Well, and it was just, yeah, very, very strange, because he's not like a typical looking person. He's got...
No,
like,
he's very Minnesotan.
Features. So.
It's like, you know, honestly, I think, I'm glad he's not a hunter, because he'd probably be shot because somebody thought it was a Sasquatch.
Bigfoot sighting.
Nope, just another bald-bearded guy in Minnesota. Don't know why it keeps happening around here. Well, he was carrying a beer. Well, you know, it's the way it is. So, let's get into our first whiskey here. We are going to do, I think this is the most bottom shelf of the bottom shelf we've ever done.
Yeah.
It is Old Overholt Straight Rye Whiskey. It actually has quite a huge history to it.
Thank you.
Old Overholt, the original distillery, it comes from Pennsylvania. It was... Well, let me look at my notes. It was, Old Overholt was said to be America's oldest continually maintained brand of whiskey. It was found in West Overton, Pennsylvania in 1810. And, you know, like most whiskeys, eventually they made it to the Prohibition war times. And, you know, they just couldn't sustain. I mean, Prohibition just, like, killed it. Even if you got those contracts where you're doing government... like medicinal purposes, as they called
yeah.
it, like you were basically doing it to sustain. There was no big money being made in it whatsoever. You were just basically like going, okay, this is how I can keep feeding my family. However, Old Overholt did, it is now part of the National, no, it's part of the Beam Suntory Company, I believe, right now. Yeah. Yeah, this is part of the Beam family, but it's still in Pennsylvania. The production, they are with Jim Beam Distilling Company, a subsidiary of American Brands, which moved production to Kentucky. Later, the Jim Beam division was acquired by Suntory. And since December 2015, Old Overholt and Old Granddad, both of which are Beam Suntory brands, have been given they're being marketed together as the Olds. I don't. Old Granddad, Old Overholt are completely two different juices. This is a very high rye whiskey. It's very common. It's extremely common. You can pretty much find this anywhere. It is considered bottom shelf. Like, you, if you want to find it anywhere, look at the bottom of the shelf. You know, I think it's like max like a $19 bottle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I can afford that.
Yeah, but the reason I wanted to review it is one of the reasons I personally wanted to review it was like for a rye, and I'm not a big rye guy.
Uh-huh.
But for a rye, I actually do enjoy it.
The smell isn't horrible. I mean, it doesn't smell.
It's very
like burning.
It's very basic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like Ryan's high proof bullshit. But it's like if my intestines don't feel like they're on fire, it's not worth it.
Not bad.
You get a lot of rye off of it. It's very gentle to
mm-hmm.
me. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's very. You get a little bit of caramel too on the back end, but it's a very gentle rye. And like that's always been my problem with a lot of ryes is I've always felt they're very. Rye can be very abrasive. It's like eating rye bread. It's like, you know, you eat wheat bread, and wheat bread is like, oh, yeah, okay, grilled cheese, nom, 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 nom. And then you eat rye bread, and you're like, this is different?
I didn't even think about rye bread and rye whiskey. Like,
it's all rye.
It comes from a different plant or whatever.
There's
Whoa.
Rye, and then there's rye.
Yeah, okay.
But I consider this probably one of the best bottom shelves whiskeys, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's very smooth. It's
so whose picture is
that? I believe is Old Overholt himself.
It's like he looks kind of like a mix between George Washington and Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, I can totally no. There's no mustache. I'd say like George Washington, Ben Franklin's illegitimate son.
Yeah, that's probably who he
yeah.
is.
Yeah, like he was like,
born out of that torrid affair.
Yeah. George, never tell my wife. Which one, Ben? I mean, shoot, from what I hear, you're all over your little housing community. But yeah, he has like, I do like the bottle design. I mean, it does kind of like the plastic twist up top does kind of seem it's a bit on the cheap side, but it's a cheap whiskey. So you can't fault it for that. It's presenting itself for what it is.
And it's glass.
Yep. It is glass. I mean, it's not plastic. Which you will find, I had never seen this until like I went to Wisconsin, but like you can buy full bottles of like alcohol in general in plastic bottles, and I'm not talking like the handles. I'm talking like just like a bottle like this, and it's plastic, like from the gas station, and it's like okay, they must just have a lot of glass breaking issues up there. I mean, it's like oh, my hands are so slick from the cheese. Well, let's put out the plastic bottles. You know those cheese curds.
They need to make them with like the grips in the middle. So
right.
But then it's super easy. Like the exercise bottles, you just have.
Oh no! What they need to do is like create it like a bowling ball, like where you just can like grab it with like two fingers like this, and you just be like, like it'll never
go.
Yep. And then like you put the brown paper bag around it, and the cop's like, "You got some alcohol there. You got bowling ball fingers, son."
Just mouthwash.
Just mouthwash.
That's what that smell is.
But yeah, so I honestly, as far even bottom shelf, I give this a strong 6, 6.5 for me. I mean, this is, I feel it's probably one of the better bottom shelf whiskeys I've ever tasted.
For $20, that'll
do. The value and the flavor, it's right up there. I mean, this is also perfect for like, even if you're not a whiskey person, and you're having like a party, I would totally be like, no, get some Old Overholt on your, because like one, people don't see it that much. Like, you know, you usually go to a party and it's like, you want a whiskey and diet. It's usually Jack Daniels, Jim Beam, White Label, which we reviewed White Label and I'm a total fan of White Label Jim Beam. But you want to put up something that looks a little different. It's not going to, you know, it might spark a little conversation. I would say get yourself some Old Overholt and put it on your bar for a party, in my opinion.
Yeah.
All right. Now we're going to get weird. I know we put our little parental advisory thing on the front of this with Ryan saying, if you're, don't let children listen. There's a little bit of a backstory to this story I'm going to tell.
Okay.
So when we first decided to do this podcast, Brian, Celeste, and I, we did two pilot episodes. We did the very first pilot episode nobody will ever listen to. We've deleted it. Only Brian, Celeste, and I have ever listened to it. And we're like, nope, here's what we did wrong. No. We got to retry this before we let anybody else listen to it to see if this is any good. And then we redid it. But one thing that we love doing about this podcast is like we love whoever's telling the story, the other two don't know what the story's about. Because it's like, we love raw reactions and all that kind of stuff. And the story I told on the very, very first podcast, I always wanted to retell. But Brian and Celeste have already heard it. Oh. However, you two have not.
The perfect storm.
So this is a perfect time for me to revisit this story. However, I will say, this is a bit out there. This is going to be a little, this is a bit more on the true crime. Other than like the previous episodes, we've been dealing with a bit more like weird science, weird things. This is totally a weird story, but this does fall more into the true crime area.
Perfect.
So let's delve in. 1974. There is a quiet town called Osset, which is near West Yorkshire, England. It's about a sleepy town, about 17,000 people. Not a whole lot. You know, you're thinking like rural Iowa town kind of size. There's a gentleman who's about 31 years of age named Michael Taylor. He has a wife, Christine, and 5 kids and a dog. Picket fence on the England side. Their family was considered mostly a cheerful and happy one by their neighbors, with Michael described as a generally kind, mild-mannered, and loving father and husband. It's like, okay, so you're picturing like Pleasantville now. You know? It's like, oh, mowing my lawn. How you doing,
so something's horribly wrong.
We're going to go Stepford Wives. All right. However, it wasn't a time of high employment in Northern England. This was pretty much, you know, this was after, well, obviously, this is way after the war, but Michael also was injured at his previous job. He had a back injury, so it was hard for him to find work. This was far from usual in an area where the main industries of coal and cotton weaving were on the decline. So Michael was left. Michael, at this point, it's, you know, like most things, like, oh, Michael was left feeling depressed, but it's more like probably frustration. You know, he's probably like, the job. I need to feed. I get five kids. I mean, you want to talk about pressure on you to feed? It's like one thing. It's like you, your wife, and two kids. Five kids. It's, oh my God. Even with this, there was no indication that anything was amiss. Unusual in the Taylor household, the neighbors would later report that the sound of laughter and joy emanating from the home was quite common. This, I'm just like building you up for the doom.
I know. I can't.
Austin had a population that was highly religious. It was a very highly religious community, but this is the 70s, too. In England, it was very most regularly attending church. The Taylors were not very much. They were my, like, well, I mean, they were like what the Catholics call creasters. You know, you go Christmas and Easter, so you're a creaster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They call
sense.
That, it's like, oh, are you a creaster? It's like, yeah, so what? You know?
Yeah.
And then, so they didn't really go to many of the church services. A friend of the Taylors named Barbara Wardman was a naggy woman. And she, like, nagged the shit out of them and were like, why don't you go to church? Why don't you go to church? All your friends are going to church. You need to go to church because your friends are going to church. And it's like, it's not that I have anything against you. But eventually they caved in, and Michael and his family started going to this church. In the church, there was a church group called the Christian Fellowship Group, which was led by a 21-year-old Marie Robinson. She was very charismatic leader. Like, they loved her. She was very, but she was one of these, I mean, over-the-top types. Like when she was, at some point during evenings, she'd begin shaking and trembling and signs that the Holy Spirit was within her and doing the whole flopping around on the ground kind of thing. Like, you know, when a fish falls out of your hand that you just caught, and you're like, oh, no. And fish is going, woo. I'm pretty sure the fish is like, I'm dying, and not the Holy Spirit has got me. You know, and it's just flopping all over the place. At these times, Mary believed she was able to offer healing to the suffering. And at the time, Michael and his family were at one of these moments, and knowing that Michael did have a back injury and was suffering from depression, she believed that God wanted to heal him. So she tried, and supposedly he claims he did. It's like, oh yeah, it helped me, you know. And it's like, you know, I think there very much is such a thing as, like, it's like doctors will tell you laughter is a great medicine, that kind of thing. And it's like, I think the mind is extremely powerful. As if you guys have listened to other earlier episodes, like, we talked about topas one time, and I'm like, for me, my personal belief is, I mean, I'm Catholic, so, you know, it's like, I'm there. But my personal belief is, like, things have the power you give them. And I do believe that, like, when people think they're healed, it's like, they're mind over matter kind of thing. So Michael and his family are starting to get into this church. You know, they're starting to get into this super charismatic church.
They've hooked in.
Yep, they're hooked in. Yep. So when another member of the church, Mavis Smith, began to weep uncontrollably, Mary was torn who to help first. Eventually, she knelt before Mavis and began to speak in tongues in order to exorcise the woman. Which I'm kind of like, wait, was she possessed or what? It just seems like she was
just
in
weeping.
Pain. Yeah, she was weeping and in pain, you know.
Exorcise her. Okay.
To the astonishment of the congregation, Michael joined with Mary, also speaking in tongues and praying very fervently. After this, Michael was hooked, and it soon became clear that Michael had become rather enamored with the young woman.
Of course.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm like picturing the Melrose Place music in my head for some reason. after this, Michael... Okay. As I said, he was hooked. Michael became rather enamored of the young woman and began spending an inappropriate amount of time with her, attending more and more meetings and gatherings of the group, and even joining Robinson in congregations where they would use the power of God to exorcise people of their sins. So basically, he's spending all his time with this woman and, like, praying over people and just, like, really just full force. And he even engaged in private rituals in which both Michael and Robinson would stay up all night making the sign of a cross at each other to ward off. I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at the sign of the cross. I'm just picturing two people just sitting there going.
Well, and is like, it like quiet while they're doing this? Where are his five kids? I have so many questions for him.
Yeah. I'm like, so are you just going, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. And it's like, and she's shouting it back at him. And they claim they would do that to ward off what they believed was the evil power of the moon.
Oh, okay. I've heard.
Because the moon is evil.
Okay, yeah.
Werewolves, right? I mean, I guess that's the only way I can think of, like, when is the moon evil? And it's like, I guess, like, you could sit there and maybe say, like, which ceremonies they use the supposedly the power of the full moon. I will say this, like, there is recorded things that, like, during a full moon, people, especially children, do seem to get a little more wild, maybe the word, like, uncontrollable. And
he's trying to control his children through his...
The moon.
Yeah. His crosses. Trying to repel.
I, I grew up Catholic. I went to Catholic grade school and high school my whole life, and not once did Father just go, make the sign of the cross, it's a full moon!
Yeah.
Fight the moon! I've never heard about fighting the moon. I'm like, okay? When did the moon become evil? And it was kind of like, as an artist myself, it's kind of like, I have had clients who are super Christian, and they feel like skulls are signs of evil. I'm like, you know we all have one, right? I mean...
It's inside of you right now.
It's inside, exactly.
you can't avoid it.
It's like, why don't you like skulls? Because they're evil. I'm like, well, I could see it if you were carving, like, demonic symbols on the skull right. and stuff like that. You'd be like, okay, yeah, that's an evil skull. But, I mean, just a skull... We all have one. Why is that so offensive? It's like, I mean, maybe it's too much associated with death.
Death isn't evil, though.
No, it's not. It's just a culmination of a circle. It's the end. Well, no, actually, that's the wrong statement. Culmination of a circle would be another circle. But death is just a culmination of life. And it's just like, you start at the beginning, the end at the end. So, on top of this, Michael's attitude at home, unsurprisingly, began to change. He was more irritable, argumentative, and sullen towards his family, with whom he was spending less and less time with.
Because he's tired from being up all night fighting the moon.
He's like, my elbow, I mean, like, there's tennis elbow, and then there's cross elbow, and my God, my cross elbow is working up this morning. And I'm like, you do this 10,000 times, and see how you
feel. And you get a crick in your neck, I mean.
Yeah.
That's intense.
What do they call that shoulder? Oh, God. I'm trying to remember what they call that baseball shoulder injury. I can't remember.
It's not the rotator cuff?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, rotator cuff injury. And it's like, you know, nope, I thought I had some for it. I don't. So, all right. So he was getting more irritable. He was spending less and less time at home, which we knew because he was off with Robinson. This was totally unlike the easygoing, peaceful way Michael had once been, and it was assumed that the church group was somehow exerting a negative influence on him. It got to the point where Michael's increasingly bizarre beliefs, uncharacteristic erratic behavior, bad attitude, and infatuation with Robinson became quite obvious to those around him, most notably...
His wife.
His wife, yes. Perfect.
Solved that one.
Yep. So where are you going tonight, Michael? I'm going to go hang out with Robinson.
Got to go fight off the moon for you guys.
I'm doing this for you, babe.
Yeah.
This is for you.
And our kids. And the kids.
And werewolves, because I don't like werewolves. I don't. We need to fight the moon, because we don't like werewolves. During one of these, masses, congregations, one report said congregate, basically when they all got together, Christine suddenly decided to confront Michael in front of people about his relationship with the preacher and accused him of being unfaithful. It was at this point where his behavior would take a turn for the worse. So who do you think he attacked?
I want to say Christine.
I want to say the pastor, but...
Boom!
Okay.
He got it! Michael decided to attack the pastor. Michael's word to have felt an evil influence cast a shadow over him, and then, compelled by this force, turned his inexplicable sudden fury on Robinson, lashing out at her verbally and physically, even speaking in tongues as he attacked her. Several churchgoers had to remove Michael from her. He was attacking her so hard in front of people. Huh. Yeah, they had to restrain him. You know, it was... And Robinson herself would later testify to what happened. This is a quote from Robinson. I suddenly glanced at Mike, and his whole features changed. He looked almost bestial. He kept looking at me, and there was a really wild look in his eyes. I started screaming at him out of fear. I started speaking in tongues. Mike also screamed at me in tongues. So they're basically shouting nonsense at each other.
Right.
I was on the verge of death, and I seemed to come to my senses. I know that only the name of Jesus would save me, and I started saying over and over again, Jesus! Jesus! When Christine, heard me calling on the name of Jesus, she started saying it too, and I believe firmly that it was only by calling on his name that I was not killed, let alone the other parishioners dragging Michael off of her.
Right, yeah, I was like, there's a lot of people there, I would think, and...
Probably somebody was going, Jesus Christ, Matt, pull him off of her!
Yeah.
You know? So, despite this display of uncontrolled rage, Michael returned to the church the next day and received absolution and forgiveness.
Really?
Yeah. That's your WTF moment, where you're just like, what?
All's forgiven.
Yeah.
You didn't
mean I'm sorry. I feel
my blood sugar was low.
I want to do a British accent right now, but I did not listen to enough Monty Python before this. Otherwise, I would do it. Like, I can turn on the Irish accent like that. It's like, the potatoes. I'm so sorry for coming in. But it's not. No, they're English. I'm just like, it's going to just get bad Mary Poppins. So did it get better? No. It became apparent that his deteriorating out-of-character behavior showed no signs of changing. That his sanity was peeling away, and in fact, he got worse as time went on. Alerting several local ministers to the realization that he might be under the influence of demonic forces. So now we picture that scene in, is it The Exorcist or Poltergeist, where it's like the minister walking through the fog, the house.
Exorcist.
It's The Exorcist, yeah. Right? Okay, yeah. So you're like,
definitely.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I am here because I've been summoned. So the local vicar came to the conclusion that an exorcism should be performed on Michael. So two ministers by the name of Father Peter Vincent, the Anglican priest of St. Thomas, and aided by the Methodist clergyman, Reverend Raymond Smith, were brought in. These guys must be experts. So on midnight of October 5th, 1974, at St. Thames, T-H-A-M-E-S. Is that Thames or Thames?
It's the Thames.
Thames. They put an I in it. Is, you know what? If the British want to sit there and give us crap about saying herbs instead of herbs because mm-hmm. there's an H in it, then put an I in something if you want to say Tim's. Mm-hmm. You know, so St. Tim's Church. Where are you going there? I'm going to St. Jimmy's Church. Yeah. That's just the pub. So St. Tim's Church in near Barnsley is on midnight of October the 5th. For several hours, Taylor was put through unimaginable horrors trying to exorcise him. As soon as the exorcism began, he started to spit, scream, bite, scratch. Just picture exorcist, you know, like, rah, rah, sure. rah, like, oh, mm-hmm. screw you. You know, throwing everything he can at him. Eventually, he was tied to the church floor to prevent him from attacking two priests. Like, they tied him down to the church floor.
It's like, how do you tie somebody to the floor?
I mean, they got a lot of stone in churches. There's a lot of stones in churches. I mean, you just wrap a couple ropes around that altar, you're holding a bowl down to that floor.
Yeah, and so they started this at midnight.
They started this at midnight, okay. Right. You know, the witching hour. That was
kind of odd that they would start at midnight. Yeah. Right.
But, okay. Well, we got to hurry this up. The orgy for the exorcism is in 8 hours. So they tied him to the floor to prevent him from attacking the priest. And Mike, oh my God, they shoved crucifixes into his mouth.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something.
No. There's going to be a bad part coming up, okay. But it's not going to be that kind of bad. You know, like Ving Rhames, Pulp Fiction, kind of like, what's happening going to do with crosses? No. They shove crucifixes, but honestly, though, shoving crucifixes in somebody's mouth.
Like, you could choke
them? Yes, like they're just like jamming it in there, like, well, if you won't say the name Jesus, we're going to put Jesus in your mouth.
You choke on it or.
Yeah, it's break supposed your to be tooth? Like.
I don't know.
I kind of think they probably look at it like vampires kind of thing, where it's like, you know, you spring holy water or you put a cross on a vampire kind of deal. Like the demonic spirits are supposed to go, ouch, ooh, that burns, I better go.
Well, they should have just waterboarded him with holy water. Then.
I think you just reinvented how to handle exorcisms from now on. All right. You know all that other crap, we just recite prayers over and over again? Here's what we're going to do. Here's a potato sack and a bottle of holy water. You're going to wrap the bottle's potato sack across their face, you're going to hold them down, and you're going to pour the holy water over their mouth. They're going to feel like they're drowning, but it's the demons drowning.
Yep.
It's just the demons drowning, not them. And the church is like, two steps. We spent 7 hours shoving crosses in this guy's mouth.
Mm-hmm. Less supplies, you know, no muss, no fuss.
So they did douse him with holy water, though. And being forced to confess his sins, all the while growling and snapping at anyone who came near him. Supposedly, too, I don't have it in my notes here, but I do remember when I was reading this, like, supposedly, too, they did, like, put, like, rocks and stuff on him, like, pressure-wise. Like, to, like on his chest and stuff to, like, hold him down, which was just like, what the hell? It's like, are you treating him like a balloon? Out, demon!
Like, or like the thunder blankets, you know, that you put on the dogs, like because
the weighted blanket, be gone. Was that a fart or a demon? I'm taking it as a demon.
Both.
It kind of smells like sulfur. So the priest in charge of here's my favorite part. So the priest in charge of the exorcism claimed that it was ascertained that 40 demons inhabited Michael's body. Whoa. 40 demons. I so wish I could find something where they said 43 or 44. Something right. where it's just been like an obscure number. It's like, how'd you come up with that? Uh-huh. So we're going to get into some of these demons. Those representative of the demon of incest, bestiality, here's my favorite, blasphemy. Okay. And I am sorry, if you're shoving crosses in some dude's mouth and he's like rolling around, I guarantee you there is at some point that priest is going, God damn it, hold him down! You know? And he's like...
taking the Lord's name.
Yep. lewdness, which I don't even know how that manifests itself. It's like, is he just flicking these guys off?
Flashing himself,
farting on people. That's so lewd. He has the demon of lewdness in him. Heresy, masochism, and carnal knowledge. That's another one. Carnal knowledge. I know what that means. I know what that... But at the same time, it's like, because it's like carnal knowledge. It's like, I'm sitting there going, and here is what doggy style is. So, blah, 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 blah. He's like just describing all these weird sexual acts. And the priest's like, stop. So these alleged demons did not go easily, each one having to be reportedly dragged out kicking and screaming. I do want to know. There's 40 demons, and like, you're like, hate. Some of the other demons, they meant hate, murder, rage, all that. Mm-hmm. I did sit down and kind of put a list together myself of some other possible demons, because I refuse to believe that we're ending with blasphemy as a top demon. Mm. So I'm going to read some of the demons that I think he was expelled with.
Okay. Did you make these up, or did you?
I totally made these up.
Okay, I can't wait.
The demon of ghosting.
Okay.
Yeah. Just keeps like going on dates and then disappearing. Driving in the passing lane, lower than a speed limit.
Oh yeah, uh-huh. That's real bad.
The demon of loud sneezing. Screw those people. Where they have to not just go, achoo! It's like, achoo! It's
also loud chewing.
Yep. The demon of awkward laughter. Those people suck. Sorry, and people are going,
as we're laughing.
Right. The demon of bad tipping. The demon of pause talking. Those are the people who talk in a sentence. They're like, I really enjoy your hat. And I like the imagery on the front of your hat. It's like they're a reporter, and they just like to pause as they talk. The demon of close talking.
Yeah. Real bad.
The demon of inappropriate comments. That's the guy. That's the guy who walks up and is like, he's like, Maggie, this is Jim, my boss. Jim, this is my daughter Maggie. She's a virgin. What? Why would you say that? The demon of open mouth chewing.
Okay, good. I was like, you have to get that on there.
The demon who leaves crude internet sites open on library computers. The demon of crotch punching. And what I mean is that guy who's like, what's up, Tom? Boom! And just like taps him in a little, like, you know those guys? They're just like, they think that's something like a good thing. It's really not. It's like, nobody likes that. It's like, Jim, pop! I'm gonna hit you. The demon of urinating all over the floor in public restrooms.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like when it's a puddle. You know what I'm talking about? It's like, that's demon work right mm-hmm. there.
Demonic.
That's demonic possession.
That's right? Demonic possession.
The demon of alligator arms, which I am taking this from the Geico commercial where it's like, I'll get the check, and little arms can't reach for the check. And it's like, it's that friend who's like, hey, you want to go out to dinner? I'll treat you to dinner. And the check comes and like, I'll get it. No, I can't reach it. There's the demon of people who wear Crocs. No, we just don't. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. I think that's good enough as far as those demons go. I think those are pretty
bad. Those
are
all really awful.
Yeah. So after those other ones that I mentioned, the two, the priests, they stopped at 8 a.m. the next morning. They were exhausted, could no longer continue. It was decided that the exorcism would have to be finished at a later time. Although the priests claimed that three demons remained, one of insanity, one of anger, and one of murder.
Sure.
Which I'm kind of like, that's kind of a shit job. You know, you get all the like the lesser demons out, but you leave like the worst ones in there.
Right. Insanity and murder.
And they basically told him, go home, come back tomorrow.
It's not like he wasn't like left chained to the...
They just didn't walk away. There's, like, crucifixes sticking out of his mouth. He's chained to the floor with, like, rocks on him and stuff.
I feel like they should have.
I know.
Well, this is an unprofessional exorcism.
Yeah, just leave him with these three demons that have nothing...
Of the worst...
Right.
Of the worst demons.
Yeah.
Like, to me, I'm kind of like... It's like firefighters coming to your house, putting out the fire in your shrubbery and on your lawn, and then going, we'll be back tomorrow to put the house out.
Right.
You know? It's like, wait, no. The house, we're tired. We're exhausted. Those bushes were a lot of work for us to put out.
You'll be fine.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine in your burning house. It'll just be nice and toasty. It's supposed to be cold tonight.
Yeah.
Enjoy. We'll be back tomorrow. It's like, you're just leaving the worst for him.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's insane to me. So there was a woman named Margaret Smith who actually had a little bit of a chilling prophecy when she told the ministers. She actually told the ministers she had a dream about the exorcism. She claimed that she had received a warning in her mind she believed to be from God, which said that the demon of murder was going to escape and kill. And the priest still went, you know what? I'm tired. I miss my stories. Why don't you come home and... We'll come and then come back tomorrow and we'll finish the job. We'll put out the rest of the fire. And that is where I think we're going to stop to do our next whiskey.
Okay.
Our next whiskey is, I'm going to finish this first one, is this one is Weller 12 years. This is age 12 years. This is actually in the common to rare area. I would put this in the uncommon area, but these days it leans more towards rare. It did become what they call an allocated bottle. An allocated bottle is a liquor store can request it. They can't order. So they get it if they get it. They don't if they don't. And they can't, they don't know how much of it they're going to get. They can't. It's not like it's like, hey, I need three cases of Jameson. Jameson,
right.
Like basic stuff is not considered allocated because it's not, you know, it's very it's in abundance. You can be like, I want this much Jameson, this much Jack Daniels. And Weller 12 has become on the allocated. So you can say, if you have any Weller 12 in, I will take what you will give me. So the liquor stores, they get what they get. On the secondary market, you know, I mean, normally this bottle is like, I want to say it's like $30, $35 bottle. And secondary, I'm going to tell you right now, secondary I've seen it go for over $100.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, people have kind of blown it up. And not because of that it's not worth it, it's just they just, this is a Buffalo Trace product. This is, so it is, you know, Sazerac Company, you know, Buffalo, Frankfort, Kentucky. I do not have paperwork on this. I'm sorry. I had to, like, type this up in 24 hours.
What the
story.
Hell?
And the other stuff, the old Overholt review came and my stuff came from that because I was going to do that in the previous episode. I was like, oh, I'm going to pull that one out of the box. This one, I think I know enough of Weller. I mean, I think most people are listening to this have heard of Buffalo Trace. We reviewed quite a bit of Buffalo Trace products. We actually did review the out of the Weller family. There is the Weller Special Reserve, which is the green label, which is the most common of the three. Then comes the Weller Antique, which is a 101 bottle. It is with the red label that follows in the middle. So it's not as common as the green, but it's not as uncommon as the Weller 12, which is the black label. So this is a rare bottle. Kind of difficult to come by. It's not super hard to come by. This is not like getting a Van Winkle or anything like that. So as far as like the bottle design goes for me, I like their older version was more of a squat teardrop. Mm. This is more lengthy and I don't like the neck. I don't like this little bubble at the in the neck and stuff. It's just kind of, oh yeah. Okay. I'm just going to keep just grazing this and just describing it. And then it's going to be like whiskey everywhere. You know?
It's a real party. Thank you.
Celeste and Ryan said I had to be nice.
Just keep the whiskey pouring.
Yep. But yeah, I mean, it's not a cork bottle either. It's a screw on top, but it's, you know, it does have a very strong, like oaky caramel to it. More oak than caramel, I would say, though. This is not a high proof. It's not high proof. It is a 45, it's 90 proof. Whereas the Overholt
was
80 proof. Yeah. So this is on the lower side of the proof, so you shouldn't be getting a burn off of it. I get a very smooth, I get like a hint of dark chocolate, actually.
It's got a deeper, I don't know how,
yeah.
Like I, don't know how else to describe it compared to that. It's just more of a full body.
I have flavor wheels.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ryan, it's nice. I didn't have these.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, maybe like a roasted.
Yeah, I could get that, like a roast. Yeah, like I do get that oakiness, but it's not like that char oakiness. You know, it is more like a roasted pecan kind of thing. Like, you know, when you walk by like one of those like roasted nut stands, like when you're at like a carnival or something like that, I get that kind of flavor off of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I generally enjoy this Weller 12. I wish it was more readily available. I will never pay secondary for it, ever. Yeah. It, to me, it's like, I think that's ridiculously overpriced for what it is. But I wish it was more readily available. I mean, honestly, this would be a staple on my bar, personally.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of why I picked these two, Old Overholt and Weller 12, is like, if I was having a party, and again, if Weller 12 was more readily available, these I would be out, because like the person who would be like, oh yeah, you know, I'm kind of into whiskey, you know, I've tried this and tried that, you know, they're like, oh, have you had it's like, I've had Jack Daniel's single barrel, which I'm like, that's a decent whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
But that'd be somebody I'd be like, oh, well then you need to try that. Like Weller 12 would be kind of like my gateway whiskey into really getting
into the hardcore stuff.
Yeah, like that would be like my gateway whiskey. Whereas Old Overholt would be up there too. Like I said, it'd be very, you know, readily available. You know, I wouldn't have a problem people mixing it. I just wish it was more readily available, but I understand why it's not. I mean, 12 years, that's...
Is that exclusive?
It's hard. Well, the aging is hard to come by.
Right.
I mean, because, like, you need to understand, like, back in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, people didn't drink whiskey because, like, their parents drank whiskey. And so it's like we all do. We revolt from where we come from. You know, it's like, well, my dad liked this, so I'm going to like the opposite. So, like, gin and vodka became very popular. Like, you know, like, my father-in-law loves gin. You know, he loves his Tanqueray. You know, I mean, most people like their gin, their vodka, and all that kind of stuff. So whiskey took a huge hit. Not only did Prohibition, they took a hit, but they took another hit in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and even 90s to an extent. But the 80s, 70s to 80s, they call it the glut era because like they were just trying to give this stuff away. I mean, that's why there's all those like decanters and stuff that is like of the Model T, of this car, or of this, or of that, or of that. Like you walk through any antique store, and you're going to see like whiskey decanters all over the place. Like you'll even see like the Jayhawk bird, whatever. Yeah. And you know, because like, they couldn't give it away because people didn't want to drink what their parents drank. And now whiskey's kind of come back, but they didn't have the amount. So that's why it's like, and whiskey is very much something that needs to be aged.
Right.
You know, so it's like, so that's why Weller 12, to age something 12 years, it's hard to do. It's very hard to do. I mean, God forbid though, 20 years from now, I don't even think there's going to be, there's always a secondary market for everything, but I guarantee you in 20 years, probably the secondary market's going to take a huge hit because, I mean, stuff that you can get today will still be worth something, but this stuff will be more readily available because you look at anything in Kentucky, everybody's building new rick houses right now. Everybody's building new rick houses. So my evaluation on this one, I give this a solid 7.5. I know some people don't like the Weller 12, but I think some people they don't like it because of the secondary market and how hard it is to get. But at the same time, I'm like, it's still very solid. It's still there's a lot of flavors going on. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I love, you know, as a solid drinker. Now, should we get creepy? We're going to step from weird to creepy now.
Yes.
Well, no, this is going to get gruesome, boys.
Okay.
So hold on to your seats. All right. Yeah.
Hold on to your butts.
Hold on to your butts. Put your crosses in your mouth, everybody. That's why I wear a cross necklace. It's just to put it in my mouth. So, let's quick recap. They told Michael and Christine to go home. They said they'd do the rest the next day. So at 10 a.m. the same day, a mere 2 hours after they had been sent home from the church, at 9:45 a.m. it said 10 a.m. There's some time discrepancies. But October the 6th, the next morning, West Yorkshire Police received a phone call. A man had been seen wandering naked through the streets of Osset covered in red paint.
Hmm.
Uncertain as to whether or not it was a hoax, PC, Ian Walker was sent out to investigate. Making his way along the streets that Sunday morning, the police constable could have had little idea what the day would hold. He arrived at the scene, and the officers discovered a naked man curled in the fetal position and covered not in red paint, but in blood. This is in the front lawn. As the officer approached him, the man began to scream, "It's the blood of Satan! It's the blood of Satan!" I'm pretty sure he's probably a little more hysterical than that, but that was my deal with it. Clearly in a state of great distress, he was making little or no sense. Fortunately, by this time, a witness had arrived to identify the naked man as Michael. Suspecting that foul play may have taken place, "Good job on you, police officer! This man's naked, covered in blood. Something has happened here."
You have, like, Carrie Prom.
Yeah.
But ended up naked. That's the only other thing. Possibly be.
So, PC Walker immediately radioed for officers to be dispatched to his home to check his wife and children. What greeted the police at his home was a scene of appalling depravity. We're getting into some kind of nasty stuff here, but just to let you know, the kids are okay. Five kids are okay.
Okay.
Yeah, five kids are okay. Christine Taylor, the wife of Michael, and their small dog were dead.
Oh, no, not the dog. Not the dog. Was dead.
Oh, you're not going to... Yeah, I'm a dog guy, too, and even this, it's like, this is no.
Ugh.
Both have been murdered in the most shocking and gruesome way. Whoever had committed the crime was clearly deranged and evil. I really think the guy soaked in blood should be considered a suspect. Just saying. I'm not a police detective. This is merely me saying, what about the guy in blood? Christine had asphyxiated on her own blood, but before she died, her attacker had ripped off her face, pulled out her tongue, and gouged out her eyes.
Ripped off her face?
Ripped off her, like, you know, like clawing at the
tongue. Okay.
Yeah,
that's gonna take a lot of force to rip a face off.
Ugh.
Like the movie.
I'm just like, people suck. The dog got the worst of it.
Oh, no.
The dog lay close by. He had been strangled. His legs were torn out of their sockets, and his eyes and tongue, too, were also removed. Yeah. Oh. Investigative officers immediately realized that Michael Taylor was the crazed killer. Good on you, police. Good one for solving that one, Sherlock. I'm like, so who do you think it was? Well, we got two other guys. This guy just happened to walk by. I just don't like the way that guy's looking at me down the street. And we got some naked guy covered in blood. I say we just roll a dice. Evens odds. Yeah. Seriously, it's like, come on. Guy covered in blood. I mean, so the question remains, the police did ask, how did he do this horrible shit? What did he do?
Yeah.
They found no weapon. He did this with his bare hands. Huh. Yes. He did the whole thing with his bare hands. Of course, Michael Taylor claims he can't remember anything of his crime, claiming to love his wife. He appeared to have no motive. There really wasn't. They did not have any motive. Like, it was like, they had the one incident with Robinson and his wife saying he was being unfaithful and the issue at the church.
Mm-hmm.
But there really was no, like, other reports of domestic violence or anything like that. There was just this insane thing. So, in the meantime, Michael was sent to the Broadmoor Hospital, a high-security psychiatric unit, to await trial. Such a sensational bloody crime, along with its bizarre background of demon infestation and exorcisms, took the normally quiet, peaceful town by storm, of course. They all went crazy, creating a media frenzy, blah, blah, blah. The trial opened with the prosecution barrister, Mr. Jeffrey Baker, QC, telling the jury that what they were about to witness evidence that will make it difficult to believe you are not back in the Middle Ages. Michael would state during his testimony that he had no recollection of the actual killing, that he had been under the control of evil supernatural forces, and that he had suspected that his wife had also been possessed by demons. I hate where this is going. Taylor's defense rested greatly on discrediting both the prayer group and the priest who attempted the exorcism. Quite rightly, so. I mean, the priest, yeah. During the proceedings, it was pointed out that the Christian Fellowship group had been more like a fanatical cult, influencing Michael with potent mind control and indoctrination, exacerbating any mental issues he had already had, and at one point the group was described as neurotics feeding neurosis to a neurotic. Yeah, I'm not full in buying that one.
Sure.
That's a little bit of a stretch for me. I get how some organizations can be like that, totally. I mean, look at, like, even recently in the news, that NXIVM stuff. You guys have read about that?
I just was reading about it
today. Yeah, like that NXIVM thing.
That's a sex cult.
Yes, like, yeah, from the girl from Smallville.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Or woman, I'm sorry, woman from Smallville. I mean, but, like, yeah, it's just crazy what they were doing there. I mean, people can be susceptible. It did not seem like, I mean, like, that whole thing, staying up all night, praying at the moon thing, I'm like, that's messed up. But to me, I don't think that necessarily means, like, okay, now let me go rip the legs off a dog.
Right. Right. Well, did anybody check on the kids' welfare? Like, had they ever, they never had a problem with the kids?
There was never anything with the kids.
Domestic.
The kids basically ended up with other family at the end of this. But they, no, I mean, the kids, everybody else seemed fine and pretty regular. I mean, this, it's just like, this guy just went nuts. But of course, as lawyers/barristers, because this is in England, their job is to, you know, try to find the angle. So the blame was also directly leveled at the exorcism itself, which, honestly, I feel that's right. I personally think, after reading this, I think the exorcism exacerbated his mental illness to the point where, I mean, like, I'm sorry, they basically tortured this man for, like, hours.
And then they didn't notify the police. Like, I mean, this is a smaller town. I feel like the police would have or should have been notified that this was going on.
Here's my thing, though. Even as a priest, and you believe that this person is being demonically possessed, and you're like, we got all of them but three, and the three we didn't get were insanity, anger, and murder.
Right.
Yeah, maybe you should notify the police that this guy might be unstable.
Right. It's like, how did they let him go in good conscience, knowing? Mm-hmm.
Right.
Especially if they say that's what was still in him, you know, like, if he didn't have, like, the... Like,
lock him in prison until they can get back to it.
Right.
Right, or just hold him overnight until, like... I mean, why not have just held him overnight? Why not? I mean, like, I'm sure, like, in a small town like that, somebody knows somebody. I mean, like, they said it was a very religious community. So, obviously, the priests have to be friends with...
And there's a psychiatric hospital there, too?
No, this was in Broadmoor. I think that was a ways away. But
that's like, if they had that facility, too, there's no reason for...
Remember, this is a town of, like, 17,000 people. Yeah. Okay. So, like, what I'm thinking, though, because it's that small, like, you can't tell me the reverend, the priest, whatever, didn't know somebody where they're like, hey, listen, this guy, we're doing a demonic exorcism, and can you just keep him in the jail until we're ready to finish this on? Mm-hmm. I need to eat some Cheetos and take a nap. Yeah. You know, I mean...
Got to flip on some Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew Red. This is serious business here. Yeah. Mountain Dew Red. Code Red, that's right. Mountain Dew Code Red. So, they leveled at the exorcism, with prosecution claiming that the ritual had fed off the warped ideals, beliefs, and religious fervor he had picked up from the group. The negative influence they had on him and taking its toll on him, already wary, sleep-deprived, mentally disturbed man, pushing him over the edge in the realm of madness and murder. That's very true. That's just like we were just saying. I can see where they can build a defense off this. It's like, okay, you were shoving crosses in this man's mouth. Mm-hmm. You had him tied down. I mean, that's crazy. One of the barristers, a Mr. Ognall QC, made a statement. I'm aware that it is generally regarded as improper for an advocate to express any personal feeling or opinion about the case in which he is engaged. I'm afraid I find it quite impossible to observe such constraints in this case. Let those who truly are responsible for this killing stand up. We submit that Taylor is a mere cipher. The real guilt lies elsewhere. Religion is the key. Those who have been referred to in evidence, and those clerics in particular, should be with him in spirit now in this building each day he is incarcerated in Broadmoor, and not least on the day he must endure the bitter reunion with his five motherless children. I mean, they played that shit up.
Wow. Dramatic.
In the end, Michael was found not guilty.
Okay.
By reason of insanity. Such bullshit. And was deemed to be both clinically and legally insane. After which, he was sent to Broadmoor Secure Hospital for the criminally insane. He would remain there for 2 years.
Oh, didn't see that coming.
2 years. Followed by another 2-year sentence at Bradford Royal Infirmary. So he spent 4 years. 4 years for this brutal murder. He was then judged to be sane and released back into society. Michael would continue to display odd behavior as well as fall into deep depression, and he made a total of 4 suicide attempts over the years since he was released. 4! On July of 2005, he was arrested for sexually harassing an underage girl. During this trial, his previous charges were deemed to have no bearing on the current case. He shot.
Yep.
What?
Yep. He's like, no, no, no. We understand he ripped his wife's face off. That has no matter here. He slapped some little girl in the butt. You know, and it's like, are you kidding me? Okay. Are you serious? I'm sorry. I think any trial, that's what I don't get. I get that it's like, okay, if you're tried for something, mm-hmm. America, England, wherever, you're tried for something, even if you're found not guilty, it's like, oh my God, I was reading it. There was a case recently on something where, oh no, it's like the Golden State Killer case. They're trying to throw some crap out where they're like I mean, people come talked about, you hear about the Golden State Killer?
No.
Oh. he was a guy who basically like tortured, like, I mean, he basically raped like 40 some odd women and killed 12 people and probably broke into like 100 different homes.
That's like BTK-ish. Like, something
worse.
Similar
yeah,
to that.
That
okay.
level.
Okay.
From like 78 to 88 or 76 to 86, somewhere around there. I don't know the dates. Right. And like, I read something recently where it's like, the stuff they try to get thrown out that you're not supposed to pay attention to, it's like, well, wait a minute. I understand he was found guilty, but he was obviously found guilty of something.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Golden State Killer's case, they were talking about like, numerous people who were raped by him claimed that he had a small penis. They were like, he had an unusually small penis. And like his defense attorney's like, well, no, you can't look at his junk. Nope, can't look at his junk. Nope. And it's like, well, wait a minute. And it's like, no, this is a relative fact of this case. Like, it's not like somebody was just like, he had a penis. Well, let's see that penis. No, it's like, no, people are like, it's part of identifying who he is. And it's like, this is like, wait a minute. He murdered somebody. And even though you were found not guilty of insanity, that still doesn't mean you didn't commit it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're saying, like, you committed it, but you were just crazy. So why can that not be... I mean, maybe I'm misinterpreting this wrong. I'm not an expert. I'm just some dude who likes to drink whiskey and talk some shit. So he was... he showed a low medium risk of reoffending, and this plus his lack of any previous conviction of sexually related crimes led to a light sentence of 3 years, 3 year stint of community service and further psychiatric treatment. The aftermath of the big trial did bring with it a great amount of public outcry over the use of exorcisms, rightfully so, within the church. And indeed, this became the last recorded exorcism to be carried out by the Anglican Church. Throughout the trial and in the ensuing years, the chief priest who had been in charge of the exorcism, Peter Vincent, continued to adamantly insist that Michael had indeed been inhabited by demons and that it had been an authentic case of true demonic possession. He would say, "I am quite convinced God will bring good out of this in his own way. However tragic it was at the time, if the psychiatrist said this crime would not have been committed but for the exorcism, that seems a rather strange thing to say. People will draw their own conclusions." Screw that guy.
Well, so they said here the 3 demons left in him. Did they ever go
No,
back
I'm sure they're still in there, and they're just chilling out, eating Cheetos, watching like old episodes of Jersey Shore or something. You know, they're like, oh, that Snooki sure gets me in a rage. Let's go, like, rip apart a dog, you know.
So he's still alive.
Yes, and I think he is still alive.
I mean, because 2005 was not that long
ago. I know,
ago.
I had to keep, like, reminding myself that this is semi-recent, because with as stupid as these people were, I was thinking this was, like...
No, this
back
was, like...
when they were doing...
Remember,
lobotomy.
It was 74.
Yeah.
It was started in 74. The murders happened in... I want to... The murder happened in 76?
Six, yeah.
No. It was all in 74. It was all in 74. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, back then, they were having kids earlier, so, you know, I mean, yeah, he's still probably pretty alive. But, I mean, to sit there and I just can't understand the priest thinking that the exorcism. I'm like, you're physically abusing somebody. I don't give a shit what your contextualization of that abuse is. It's like, they deserved it. We're going to whip the demons out of him. It's like, that's ridiculous. That is just violence. Violence will never create a positive effect. It's like, it's just like, and that kind of anger and hatred, like individual on individual kind of, it will never do anything.
Right.
I mean, And it's just like, it's disturbing to me that somebody who, like a priest, could sit there and say, I don't understand why they think that that would have caused triggered him.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you look at people who have been in prison. I mean, well, it's post-traumatic stress disorder. Look at that. I mean, like they hear, like soldiers who are in war and they hear these like bangs, like pop, pop. And all of a sudden they hear firework and they like all of a sudden they're reimagining things.
Yeah.
This guy was tortured for like 8 hours straight. And you don't think like, what if something happened while he was at home? I mean, nobody, that's the whole thing. Like I could find nothing about what would have triggered. Like what happened in those 2 hours since he got home? Like there is nothing. It's like about like, oh, there was food on the counter. It looked like she was cooking or this
crucifix.
Or yeah. Or,
fell on him.
Yeah. Well, he tripped and a crucifix fell in his mouth and he was like, no!
Went crazy. Well, I just can't believe that after only 4 years they said he was sane, right?
Yeah,
that,
4 years. Mm-hmm. He did 2 years
like,
of Broadway.
He's had this, even though he was found not guilty, but, I mean, ripping a dog's legs out of sock, like
he did everything with his bare hands.
Yeah, like, you've got to have some kind of rage, I would think, do that.
I mean, was he, like, does it describe, like, his body type? Like, I mean, like,
I would say he's probably like average body type. I mean, as far as them in the picture, I have seen pictures of him. I would not say he's not like Lou Ferrigno. I mean, he's not like, oh, Hulk rage.
I mean, that would take like quite a bit of strength to like rip,
but you know,
out of socket and tear a face off. Like,
yeah, well, we've all heard those stories though, too, about like the mother who could lift, like in that adrenaline to lift a car. And it's like, I mean, maybe he went, like, into that rage because he had just been tortured for 8 hours that he just, like, lost his freaking mind and just was, like, was that uncontrollable rage where it was just, like, he just went berserker mode, you know, and just, like, lost it. It's just, like, it's just, I mean, to me, it kind of comes down to, and where the weird part for me personally is, like, well, is demon possession real? I have to say yes, but not in the way that you would think,
right?
You know, I do think demon it's a mental illness. I think it was like a mental illness that got exacerbated by this torture. And I'm sorry, I'm standing by the fact that like these priests tortured him.
Right.
I'm sorry. You tie people down, shove stuff in their mouth, put stuff on their chest, and then like sit there and scream and yell at them. That's torture.
Right.
That is torture. Bottom line, you know. And so yeah, maybe he was possessed by demons. But to me, it's like he was possessed by a demon, like somebody's possessed by schizophrenia. You know, it's like, I don't, you know.
Do you know if anybody interviewed Robinson, like, after this happened?
There's more. You can definitely find more on this case. There's been actually a few books written on it. I have not read it because I'm an irresponsible storyteller.
I haven't even heard of this. it's all new to me, so.
Like, I didn't even give you guys the name. Oh, my God. We totally forgot to say the name of this episode before the beginning. This is the first time ever. I was going to call it the clown car because there's, like, all these demons in his
head.
I
saw that written on there, and I was expecting, like, a surface
story. So, Celeste, this is called the clown car. So it's like, because, you know, like 40 demons coming out of this little guy's head.
Well,
like,
we'll come out next.
I'm the demon of blasphemy. I'm the demon of ghosting. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So, yeah. I would be remiss to say where you can find us. You can find us on Facebook. Celeste always handles this, so I don't worry. Podcast is on Stitcher, pretty much anywhere you can download podcasts. We're at Gmail at verbaldistillery.com. We're on Twitter with something with Verbal Distillery in it. I don't know the whole Twitter handle. Sorry. It's not. Celeste, where are you?
And you guys are on Instagram.
Yes, we're on Instagram. Probably something again with Verbal Distillery.
Yep.
So now I get to say the line.
Okay.
You heard it. You can't unhear it.